a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Very good. I'm Bernie Hunniff. I'm a state representative from Yank and minority leader of the Democrats in the House. And really appreciate this opportunity today and throughout the legislative session to talk to the media and also talk to the citizens of South Dakota. We've had a busy morning already, and I'm sorry if we've delayed anybody here. We've already been to an FFA breakfast, and we just came from across town from a rural water district meeting. Rural water leaders from across the state are here in Pierre. And it's interesting, in both cases it struck me that we heard from people who talked about how we arrived in times in South Dakota when we really, really needed to make change. And that's where we're at today. That's where we're at with our budget. But the first thing the FFA leaders talked about, one of their speakers talked about how in his family history many years ago, the family were proud of raising Clydesdale horses. And they, for many generations, they raised Clydesdales. We have a technological glip.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. I'm a low-tech guy here, so you'll have to work with me. At the FFA breakfast, they talked about, one of the speakers talked about how his family raised Clydesdale horses at the turn of the last century, and on into World War I, they made a good living raising Clydesdale horses. And then into the 20s, of course, mechanization came forward in agriculture, and at some point, even though for many decades they'd raised Clydesdale horses and made a good living, they had to really create a change. They had to make a big leap of faith into the future, and at some point they sold all but their two favorite Clydesdale horses, went forward into the future, and the family still has that farm today. At the Rural Water District meeting, we saw so many pioneers of rural water who 30, 40 years ago in most areas of the state, is still going on rural development or rural water development. But 30 or 40 years ago, many of them had to make that same leap. You know, they had to say, should we borrow millions and millions and millions of dollars, sign our name to those notes, go neighbor to neighbor down the country roads and sign people up who maybe can't afford $25 or $30 a month and have never had to pay $25 a month for a water bill. My dad was one of those. I remember when they came to dad and talked about that, and dad was not a big farmer, and he had seven boys to feed, but he made that leap of faith, and so did a lot of the neighbors, and we have rural water today in Yankton County. It's interesting to me, if you look around Yankton County, the farmers who made that leap, who made that change, are the farmers who are still on the land today. That's where we're at in state government. Change is a word that gets used way too often. Maybe we all get tired of it now and then. But we drastically need to change, and I hope that change begins with the legislative session that we're now beginning. I hope we don't get bogged down in just trying to balance this year's budget, although that's critically important. We have a budget shortfall. We need to make it work, and we need to maintain essential services for the people of South Dakota. But we could get bogged down in whether we should cut this program or that program a little bit, or whether we should, look at this revenue source or use these stimulus funds or just how we should put the numbers together. There is enough money to balance the budget this year and probably next year, but we're really on an uncertain fiscal course in South Dakota, and we have been for a long time. That's the concern. We have not balanced our budget with ongoing revenues for seven out of the last fiscal years. We've been on a spending spree. Many of those years we spent twice the rate of inflation in state government. Meanwhile, we've limited local governments to 3%. And interestingly enough, they don't have the funds we have, but they have a more solid financial future at the school districts and the counties. What I hope we can do this session is not get bogged down in all the minutia, but also look at the big picture and see if we can find a way to really financially lead the state into a better, brighter, and more solid future. That's the challenge, and I'm proud to be serving again this session with Senator Scott Heidepreem. He's really been a leader in that regard. He's proposed for some time now that we would have a 3% spending lid on state government, much as we do for counties and schools. If that had been in place over the past 4 or 5 years, we would not have a budget problem today, and that would really set South Dakota apart from all the other states if we just passed that simple piece of legislation. We need some broad policy like that. We also need something that caps FTEs, I believe. Perhaps pegged to the rate of population growth in South Dakota. We're willing to talk about exactly how that might work. Myself, I think we also need something like other states have a spending cap that would perhaps say that we can only spend 98% of anticipated revenues for the coming fiscal year. That would make a lot of sense, and it's probably not something that we can implement this year with the shortfall that we have, but I'd like to see some kind of piece of legislation like that that we would implement perhaps in 2 or 3 years down the road. So it's going to be an interesting year. We look forward to working with our Republican colleagues and with the governor. There's a great spirit of a camaraderie out here today, and I hope it continues for the 37 days ahead. There's also a great spirit around the state of South Dakota. I come from Yankton, a town with many state employees. They are not highly paid state employees. They do tough jobs. They work in health care. They're prison guards, snowplow operators. They do tough jobs, and while they'd like a raise, and while their paychecks have been eaten up by health insurance costs and by increased copays, they still understand that we're all in this together. We need to make it work. So I look forward to working with Senator Heidefreem, and we'll hear from him next. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. It's a privilege for me to be a part of the leadership team with Representative Hunhoff, and his leadership has been so valuable and so important to South Dakota for really quite a period of time, and I consider myself lucky to be up here with him. The question was asked earlier this morning, that's something that Bernie and I were at, what sort of reaction we are getting from the people of South Dakota about the current situation. And I thought Bernie put it well. He talked about how there is a sense of shared sacrifice throughout South Dakota. There are people pulling together, understanding that we face some difficult times, and they all want to be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. And that's sort of the backdrop that we're going to be working with here in Pierce, South Dakota. We want to be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. We think we have some really good ideas about how to put South Dakota on a proper fiscal track, and we want to talk about that. But I also find, as I go around, that the focus seems to be more on problems at the federal level than at the state level. And when I tell people that we are $32 million in the hole this year, and that absent some dramatic change, we're going to be $107 million in the hole for the next fiscal year, they are surprised to learn that. And when I tell them that we haven't had a balanced budget in the sense of revenue equaling expenditures for 7 of the last 8 years, they are very surprised. There was a fellow from Faith at the water meeting earlier this morning who said, "Are you telling me we haven't had a balanced budget in South Dakota?" And the answer is no, that's not exactly right, because the Constitution requires us to balance the budget. But in fact, if you define balance as revenues equaling expenditures, we have not been in balance for 7 of the last 8 years. We think most South Dakotans feel that that's a mistake, and that we actually should be in a state where government expenditures do not exceed the revenues coming in through our system of taxation. That's what we're pledged to do. And of course, as Bernie said, for years now, we've introduced legislation that would cap spending at 3% of the rate of inflation, which is exactly the same discipline we impose on schools and counties. I wanted to just show you and your viewers a couple of the charts that we've been using to illustrate this point. This isn't anything new. This is something we've been saying for years. These charts are just updated now. The first one deals with the number of state employees. And you can see, starting over in 1995, Bill Janklow started his third term that year. We had 13,660 state employees. That dropped 2 years later to 12,325. It gradually ticked up until here's where Governor Rounds took office. It was at 12,952, and it is now at 14,465, an increase of 1,500 FTEs for a state whose population has remained relatively the same during that period of time. And so we began to ask the question, why is that? What has happened to cause this tremendous growth, and how are we paying for it? Well, we're paying for it by increasing our expenditures at an annual rate of 5.5%, starting again back in 1995. The average rate of growth in our general fund has been 5.5%. That's a calculation made by the Appropriations Committee. Two things to point out here. One is, as I mentioned earlier, yesterday, the state of Indiana provides us with 2 days ago, the state of Indiana gives us a very good roadmap of what we can do in South Dakota There, Governor Mitch Daniels, a moderate Republican, inherited a spending rate of 5.8%. He determined to cut that in half, down to 2.9%. We're talking about a growth rate of 3%, so it's relatively in the same area. He also reduced the number of FTEs by 5,000. Now, obviously, Indiana is a bigger state than South Dakota. I don't even know if it's a proportionate decrease that we are talking about. But he was able to do that, and the net effect in the state of Indiana was the greatest increase in disposable income for the citizens of the Hoosier state in their history. That's what happens when you control the spending in government and you send that signal to the private sector that we're running state government as if it were a private business with all of the proper incentives. That's what we can do in South Dakota, but I want to close with just one little story that occurred yesterday. I was sitting in on the Appropriations Committee at 3 o'clock. The Commissioner of Administration made his presentation to the Appropriations Committee. Now, as you all know, Governor Rounds has said he will reduce the number of FTEs by 102. These are positions that are currently not filled by people, but they are funded by state government taxes. Okay? The Commissioner of Administration spoke at 3 o'clock yesterday, and he had identified four positions that he was going to, that he had suggested for elimination. And as he described this to the appropriators, the first position he talked about, he said, this is a position that hasn't been filled for a number of years. Well, I thought about that. And everyone should think about that. That means that state government, the executive branch, has come to the appropriators and said, we need you to give us a portion of the scarce resources of this state, the taxpayers' dollars, to fund this position because this is so important that we need to have this position. And it went unfilled again and again and again. I don't think the people of South Dakota think that that's the way budgets should work in state government, but that is in fact how they work. A process that we would find unacceptable in our private businesses or even in our households, the state does habitually. And it's got to come to an end. The best way to do that, I think, is to find out exactly what's going on in the agencies and bureaus of state government. A tool was adopted many years ago in South Dakota called zero-based budgeting. Bernie and I have been talking about that, and our caucuses have supported the idea of actually drilling down and finding out where the dollars are going in state government, because we have something called salary salvage. What that means is the Commissioner of Administration, when he asks the appropriators to fund that position, then can turn around and use those dollars for something unrelated to funding that position. I don't think the taxpayers of South Dakota anticipate that in the budgeting process, but it goes for a new computer, or it goes for travel, or it goes for some other purpose other than the position that that individual advocated before the Appropriations Committee. We need to change the way we do business fundamentally in South Dakota, in state government. I think it starts with getting our fiscal house in order. This week, we're going to be talking about a lot of those bills. We've come before you with a 9-point proposal for how we're going to actually accomplish this. We're going to put that in the form of legislation. I think it's going to have broad support within our caucuses. We're going to invite Republicans to join us in this step toward a little better fiscal shape for the state that we all have come to love. We believe we can do it in South Dakota. We know we can do it. Again, there is a sense of shared sacrifice. There is a belief that we all need to be a part of the solution and not the problem, and that's why we're here. So we'll be happy to answer any questions that anyone might have.
That your polls are more fiscally conservative than what the Republicans are on there.
Yes, Jonathan, if anyone claims that over the last 7 years we've been governed in a fiscally conservative way, I think these charts demonstrate that that's just not the case. There is no way you can say that a growth rate of 5.5%, which is, as Bernie says, many times twice the rate of inflation, is fiscally conservative. There is no way to say that increasing the number of state employees by 1,500 is fiscally conservative. What we are proposing is really a common sense fiscal approach to the state of South Dakota. It involves a fundamental change in the way we look at providing services in the state of South Dakota. We can do a better job with less in the way of resources.
You know, government has a natural inclination to grow. I think we all know that. It's especially true here in South Dakota, where we have a very strong executive branch, and they've perfected, taken it to an art form, how to, I would say, bypass, circumvent, even, I'll say, hoodwink in a pleasant way, the legislative process, especially the appropriations process. Scott told a story today about how we were funding FTEs that we thought were live working human beings, and it turns out that they weren't filling the positions and using the money for what? I doubt they answered that question yesterday. I think what Scott and I are asking is that we asking our colleagues in the citizen part-time legislature is to impose upon state government the same kind of restraints that we show on our own businesses. Scott runs a law firm and I run a magazine, South Dakota Magazine. And, you know, we have a natural incentive to seek efficiencies in our businesses. We have to, so we can pay our taxes, among other things. There's this natural efficiency in the private sector and in many nonprofits, and we've imposed that efficiency on cities, on counties, and schools. Somehow we need to agree on some policies that will impose that efficiency on state government, and that's really what we're trying to do. Scott has been a leader in that out here for a number of years. There are a lot of ideas floating around. I'm hoping our Republican colleagues, who also many of whom also run businesses of their own, I'm hoping that they would impose those same efficiencies on state government. If we can do that, we can really set ourselves on a solid financial course and then start to talk about all the things that we should be doing as state government once again.
Jonathan, if I could, I think it's real important to make the point, and Bernie made it, but to make the point that this is not about demonizing state employees or in any way suggesting that they are lazy. In fact, the reverse is true. Every day I meet people who are passionate about their job. They want to do it better. But as Bernie says, the natural inclination for bureaucracies is to grow. And it's not because of a bad impulse. It's a good impulse. It's someone saying, I would like to do an even better job at what I'm doing, but I need more resources to do it. I may need another FTE to do it. And they take that to the budget folks in the administration, and then it goes to the appropriations process. And the argument is a compelling one. The discipline has to come from the top, though. The discipline has to be, if we're going to change priorities and increase an FTE over here, we've got to find other areas in state government to reduce. We can't just keep growing whatever the issue happens to be in that particular year. We need discipline in that way.
Do you believe, do you have any target for how many FTEs should be cut in this budget?
In this budget?
Yeah.
Well, our goal is over the next 4 years to reduce the number of FTEs, state-funded FTEs, back to the level when the Rounds-Dugard administration started, which would be fiscal 2003. So that's a specific goal. In terms of this year, it's interesting because the governor himself has identified 102 funded, unfilled positions, okay? It begs the question, how many more are there out there in state government? And the answer is, I think, from looking at the budget book, just under 600. I'm wondering why we even tolerate 102. Why we don't go further than that and say any position that has been unfunded, unless it's a position that we all agree we have to have and there's just no one available to do it, perhaps. But if it's just an unfunded position that is representing a budgetary cushion within a bureau or agency, that should be eliminated. If you need a new computer, you should make the case to the Appropriations Committee, you need a new computer. Looking 12 months down the road, that's not too much to ask a skilled administrator to know what it is they're going to need. Sure, there are going to be exceptions, and we have provisions for budgetary transfers. But as a general rule, to ask for FTEs, you know you aren't going to fill, so you have that kind of a cushion at the end of the year. I think that's unacceptable, and that's a way to start reducing the size of state government.
Sorry, are you proposing eliminating the the flexibility rule that allows them to convert that?
No, I'm not. What I'm advocating is that we take an approach in state government where you tell us really what you need, and you don't tell us what you don't need. Don't say I need 176 FTEs in the Department of Administration or Bureau of Administration when you really only need 172, and have known that for a number of years.
So you're proposing then just executive guidance in that area, or are you going to propose legislation to curtail this activity?
Well, we think you can control the number of FTEs, and that discipline comes from the top down. The buck stops with the chief executive of the state in terms of carrying out any sort of limitation on FTEs.
The executive branch would love for us to get into an argument over whether these FTEs were justified or whether we should cut these ones. And there is no way for a citizen legislature to make those kind of judgments, and we shouldn't. The executive branch needs some latitude, and they're here 365 days of the year. That's for them to decide. The legislature should set broad policy, and obviously there's a need for it, because if you look at what the executive branch has been doing, what they've been spending over the last 7 or 8 years, obviously that's it's badly needed. So what we're saying, we need to set broad policy, and they need to find ways to make it work. And if it doesn't work, they need to come back to the legislature and make their case. But the legislature has been bogged down in fairly trivial debates, and I think the executive branch loves that. I'm not saying this by design, but I'm sure they enjoy it. But we fight over birth to three for a whole session, for example, and never really get into the big picture discussions.
It's worth pointing out, I think, that if we had just done what it is Bernie and I and our caucuses have suggested, that is to limit the growth of state government, we're talking about growth to 3% of the rate of inflation, we wouldn't have the budgetary nightmare we're facing today. And in fact, this chart demonstrates that. It just simply takes 3% and compares it to what we actually spent in each of those 7 fiscal years. And the difference is what we would have saved, which is $500 million, $522 million, simply by imposing that discipline. Now, it's often said, okay, but just what are you going to have to do without if you do that? And I think we just gave you a pretty good example of how state government functions in terms of empty FTEs and in terms of what really is necessary to provide essential services to the state of South Dakota.
South Dakota is weathering this economic downturn relatively well. In fact, we can all be proud, I think, of how we are going through it. The governor talking to the state of the state about how the agricultural sector has been such a source of strength, and our housing industry and the people who own houses and pay their mortgages. We haven't had the housing crisis of other states. We've not really had the banking crisis we thought we might in Sioux Falls, and somehow our banks in Sioux Falls are very creative, and so far we've not had the layoffs and the banking problems. Looking all through our sectors, we're weathering it pretty well because we've abided by South Dakota standards of conservatism and caution and working together with one another. I'm from Yankton County, where we have a lot of manufacturers, and they have had a lot of layoffs, and there are a lot of people suffering, but those manufacturers are working so hard to keep everybody employed. The weak link, sadly, has been state government. They're the ones that really need a bailout here in the recession in South Dakota, and their problems started well before the recession. The recession just exacerbated it.
Senator Heiterman, a month or two ago when you were first unveiling these proposals, you told me that you thought that most of the reductions in FTEs you wanted to be done through attrition. Now, you're talking about 1,500 FTEs, which is a large number. Do you still think that can be done through attrition, or do you think that there needs to be reductions in force?
I believe it can be done through attrition, David. I don't have a crystal ball. What I have done is set a specific goal, and that is in 4 years' time, reducing the number of state-funded FTEs back to the 03 fiscal year level. And we can start with funded but unfilled FTEs. That's a discussion we're going to have throughout this session. The governor's already identified 102 of the 1,500. We know that there are hundreds of others that don't involve the termination of someone because they aren't even in the position that would be eliminated. And so through attrition and the combination of functions throughout state government, I'm confident that we can get there.
Should this 3% cap be in the state constitution?
I don't know, Jonathan. I haven't thought of it that way. I know that it's something that we can do. We can live within our means as a state, and that's one way to do it. I think there's a certain danger to enshrining things in the Constitution like that. You never know when there is going to be a circumstance you can't possibly anticipate. You take an oath to do certain things, and that really has to be preeminent in any leader's mind. So I guess you're catching me a little off guard, but my gut reaction is probably not.
Assuming this doesn't pass the 3% cap, are we going to hear this from you as a candidate? These are going to be some of your central themes as a candidate for governor.
Absolutely. We need to control growth. We know we can do it. The idea that we have had fiscally conservative leadership over the last 7 years, the statistics really make it clear that we haven't had that. It's time we tried that in South Dakota, and we believe we can do it.
Well, thank you again. We're available all day if there are other questions. We really appreciate this opportunity from South Dakota Public Broadcasting and from the media in general.